Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Worst Idea of All Time with Tim Batt.
Hello.
And Guy Montgomery. We have just watched The Fate of the Furious for the eighth and final time. But we didn't do it alone. We have a very special guest today. We are joined by Paddy Harrison. Hello, Paddy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pissed.
What's happened?
It's so early.
Yeah.
It's the earliest, I think, in my life I've watched a movie that I didn't want to watch.
Is that true?
I think so.
And we invaded your space, too. We came in here.
Yeah.
What time did we get here? Like 9 a.m.?
9:05 we got
here. You got here after, yeah.
We got here. We arrived simultaneously with your breakfast.
Here's what we did. I packed up a big backpack of stuff. Microphones, a big old laptop. We went and got a coffee, and then we headed round to Paddy's apartment thing and strolled in here. I'm rearranging HDMI cables. I'm plugging things into TVs so that we can get the full cinema experience of The Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, going into the, you guys going in the bathroom, not flushing the toilet, leaving big loafs in there.
Oh, look. We don't need to get into all that.
That's a bit of backstage banter between the toilet.
That's a New Zealand thing.
Each painted the toilet.
The hand smears were, I agree, an unnecessarily detailed touch. You've actually been a very gracious host. We arrive with your breakfast. You bring us into your home. You've lit a candle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all sat down and did what I would say was a pretty unique version of watching the movie.
Yeah.
Paddy, watching a movie with you, this movie specifically, was a unique delight.
It's a bad experience.
No, it was very positive. I hate this movie. Yeah. I have felt trapped by this movie. And you kind of, your observation of our relationship to the movie and what we do, actually, it was quite powerful. It took steps to help set me free.
Well, I think that's the dysmorphia of mental illness, is that you can't, when you're tunneled into your own horrible toxic patterns of behavior, and it goes past becoming a pattern into becoming your temperament, you have a hard time of actually being able to see yourself. So you need someone who has a more objective point of view about you, who maybe doesn't know you very well, to look at the way that you're living and say, hey, you're hurting people, and those people that you're hurting are yourselves.
Oh, wow.
I mean, your advice to us, and I hate to bring something out of the context of being on the mic to on the mic, but you said you guys should kill yourselves for your own good.
For your own good, because it's like you have to get rid of the toxic people in your lives, and you are the toxic people in your own lives.
Damn.
And I say that with like compassion.
Yeah,
I think
I'm
it would be a compassionate gesture.
I'm hearing the compassion and the warmth behind the suggestion that we kill ourselves to sort of end our own suffering with this podcast, which has been going on for a very long time now. But I would like to echo what Guy said there. It was nice watching it here with you today.
I had a lot of fun. I also didn't realize that I had seen this movie before. And then I watched, as we were watching it, I was like, oh yeah, I have seen this movie.
You've seen all of them before?
I haven't seen the most recent one, but I've seen all the other ones, including this one.
And do you have any concept of how this one stacks up against the others in terms of quality?
One of the worst.
Yeah, that's what everyone said.
Yeah, it's quality. It's just so, it just, which is so an algorithm exciting movie at this point.
This is the eighth time we've seen this, but now we get to watch Seven later on, which I'm so excited for. But
what was kind of interesting to see you guys watch a movie that you've seen eight times, and it kind of, you weren't as, I thought you'd be like, I don't know, more tapped into what was going on, but it kind of looks like the movie's bludgeoned you into like this weird, like awake REM sleep.
It's a hard movie.
Kind of like,
it's a hard movie to tap into.
It's
though.
It's also, this is reflective of what you were saying before, where if it's just Tim and I, we sort of resist the urge to talk to one another and both kind of push each other to concentrate on the movie. But you sort of were lying down and trying different body positions and sort of just, you know, we were having quite entertaining conversation. And then every 15 minutes, you'd say, was that CGI? And, you know, we'd rewind for one frame.
Well, it just felt like if I stayed too still, if I looked at the screen for, if I sat and actually looked at what was happening on the screen for more than like 5 minutes at a time, I could feel like fluid build up in different parts of, like bile building up, and it just felt, I would feel like nauseated at, because I think if you watch it, it's the kind of movie where if you start to understand what's happening, you start getting sick.
Yeah, exactly.
If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. When you said, like, you know, we're not sort of fully engaging with the movie in the way that you would expect for two people who have seen it so many times, like we don't sort of know it and all the beats and the rhythms as well as we should. It's that, I think it's a little bit of self-preservation.
I think
shifting a lot during the movie and making a lot of comments and doing a lot of asides, because I think when I did stop to like settle into the movie and then I would look over and then you guys were actually focused on the movie, it was pretty unsettling, the kind of the, I guess, emptiness, seeing how emptily you two are, emptily, just kind of like void of human experience. It didn't feel like you were experiencing anything. It was like looking at a photo of somebody frozen in time.
That's what it feels like.
State this during the screening, but you were looking after us. You were keeping an eye on us during the film. I thought you were struggling to concentrate, but you were keeping two eyes on the lads.
I think I was cushioning you from
the blow of watching this movie an eighth time in full. I think if either of you actually sat down and gave a concentrated watch to this movie an eighth time, you would both get severe brain damage and like organ failure.
This is one of the most generous offers we've had from any guest who we've done any episodes of the podcast. Aside from maybe after we did the second season, Paul F. Tompkins said that we should just stop doing it outright.
He insisted that we stop doing this because of what it was doing to us. But yeah, you looked on to what we were doing and you saw two boys in trouble. And you have really tried to help,
and you have helped. You're men.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's not be men calling ourselves boys.
I've infantilized
enough
myself.
Enough of that. Accept the responsibility that you're a man doing this. You're not a boy doing this.
Oh, no, I don't like where this is going.
No.
I liked it when I was being called an adult, but now I've got responsibility coupled with that.
Yeah. I think it's just an opportunity to meditate on your daily quality of life, the use of your time,
intention. Please stop this line of thought.
The value in doing things that are conceptually funny versus the turmoil you're metabolizing.
Oh my god!
Any given moment of your day.
It feels as though you're staging an intervention.
I just feel like there are things that can be. It's like, oh, you know, that it's funny in concept, but then the act of it is like, you know, a car accident for your soul over and over again. Yeah.
Like you're that. Lifting up the curtain too high.
Yeah, this is scary stuff.
Can I ask what outside of the entertainment value of the idea of doing it, do you feel that there are positive benefits of having seen these movies as many times as you've seen them? Like what can you say after watching this specific movie 8 times? Have you learned?
Petty, what benefit could there be to watching like Fast 9 times? Like what benefit could there be?
Do you hear how pointed that like tone in your voice is that you're pointing it at me? That should be pointed at yourself.
But that's the reason why we're doing it.
Can you answer?
And look at my body language, by the way. As you've been like unwrapping the sort of onion of the last terrifyingly almost 10 years of our lives doing this podcast together, my body language, I just noticed, has been really like closing up. Like I'm getting defensive. I'm trying to protect my physical body because
I don't even know if
this is confronting.
See, it's really interesting. Your perception of what your body's doing is that you're like, oh, I'm like closing off. You're actually becoming very knife-like. Your body is actually weaponizing and you're kind of externalizing. You're trying to rationalize and validate your own sick behavior in an externalized way that anyone who can kind of give a critical lens on that is actually, you know, primed to be stabbed.
You think I'm turning into a knife?
Yeah.
In a metaphysical sense. You're not right. Like physically, that's what's happening right
now.
Your
hands are blading up.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And you think that's what I'm doing is like a defense mechanism, is that I'm sort of sharpening myself so that if anyone gets too close, I can sort of injure them before they can get too close to me with the stuff.
Well, just moments ago, how quick you were to flip a very sensible question on me in a way that as if I have any responsibility in anything that's happening.
Was that overly defensive of me?
It didn't feel overly defensive, but it felt like... not sarcasm. There's a deflection that happens, I think, when people ask a question to fill time. They ask a hypothetical question to fill time in hopes that you put the onus on the other person in the hypothetical response to decide whether or not it's worth it to continue to go down that road, or if they will be redundant in what they have to respond with, if that checks out. Like by you being me being like, what do you think the benefits are of you doing this the same time? And you being like, well, what do you think the benefits are? It's like, then it's like, oh, if I continue to push it, then I'm maybe being a little redundant. So
wow.
it's like a gaslighting, flipping the onus and on me to be the person that's like, if I actually push this, I'm being annoying. Me, Patty, I'm being annoying. When actually you're being kind of vicious and nasty. And that's what doing this does to you.
Because originally...
And Guy, you are not omitted from this. You have some splaining to do too. Well, I want to hear.
Now I
want to hear you. I don't care what I have to say about this, because I feel like I'm like, this is sick. You're sick.
I'm getting so much out of this.
The
is really insightful.
We have watched it with you is because we do care what you think. We need to know what you think about this, because we can't share any new information. You're providing new perspective, at least to our experience. But in terms of the movie, I don't like it.
Have you seen a movie that you do like that many times?
8 times. Maybe Inglourious Basterds.
You love that movie?
Yeah, I like that movie.
What about that movie do you like?
I think it's funny. I think it's well acted. I like the sort of, you know, the set pieces. There's some great scenes. It's got one of the great opening scenes.
What is the opening of that movie?
Christoph Waltz. And also, you know, in the context of my movie fandom, I didn't even know this actor existed, but he goes to a rural farm in France where the milk farmer is hiding. And he's like very charming and debonair, and he knows that there are people under the floorboards, and it's very tense. He's drinking milk. He's very, very charismatic, very villainous. It's a great opening scene. If that's on, I can't stop watching, you know, I just keep going. I love that movie. It's nice to talk about something I enjoy.
So there's balance?
Well, not really.
Well,
you know, I'm watching Fast 7 times next.
Well, there is, it sounds, like a there's someone inside of you who is looking out for you in a way that the current one that's leading right now is not. The current version of Guy that's sitting on the couch right now, holding the microphone, recording the podcast.
Well, this is dessert. You know, we just worked our way through a very dry, challenging meal. And the conversation is the treat.
Of the movie.
Yeah, this is the part to look forward to.
To me, this feels like sauerkraut or a digestive or some sort of digestive aid, where it's like maybe it's not the most delicious food in the world, but it's so nourishing.
Microbiome.
And, incredibly important and helpful. The things that you've said so far, to me, really confronting.
What's a movie that you've seen that you really like, that you've seen as many times as you've seen this movie?
I'm not sure if there is one. I've seen Interstellar a lot.
How much is a lot?
Maybe 6 or 7 times.
Okay. That's on par.
Yeah.
So you'll have seen Interstellar almost as many times as you'll watch the 7th Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah. And so is this like a reassurance that... like what you reflected with Guy, is there a person? Is there a healthy? Is there a healthy person inside of Tim looking out for Tim? Do you think?
I think so.
I hope so. I don't think I'm as healthy when it comes to self care as Guy is.
What, you don't think?
What's
so?
Paddy? What's a movie that you love? Are there any movies that you go back to watch multiple times as like a comfort food movie?
Yeah, I have a couple movies. I love Finding Nemo.
Mm.
I like movies that I find myself watching on a plane when I feel a little stressed out. It's like Finding Nemo, WALL-E. I know WALL-E has problematic, fat phobic themes in it, which is why I can't stop coming back to it. It just feeds that part of my soul, that fat phobic part of my soul. And I also watch Eternal Sunshine a lot on planes, and I watch Before Sunrise a lot.
Wow, you're on a lot of planes. There's 4 movies you watch a lot on planes.
Well, I'm a pilot.
Oh. You're
and I'm watching, and I'm not, I don't have, I'm not allowed to watch on a screen, so I watch movies on my phone. I download them before the flight.
That was lightning quick. One thing I did notice while watching specifically this movie, and I know that...
Say its name.
Fate of the Furious, is you've got a real eye for detail on cars. You were obsessed with the idea there was a Subaru Impreza in the final scene.
Like, I bet you there was.
I'm not taking the bet.
So here's the thing. You guys are working backwards through the franchise. There are more Imprezas to come.
It's there cool. Are That's some, good.
There's Mitsubishi Lancers. There's Eclipses. There's Eclipse Spiders.
Do you like cars?
There's Dodge Challengers. Dodge Chargers. There's Nissan GTRs, there's Skylines, there's multiple different, there's different version Skylines, there's BMW M3s.
You love cars.
There's a fucking Enzo Ferrari.
Is there? Well, what's that on?
You love cars.
No, I think the Ferrari Enzo is in the Charlie's Angels.
You love cars. Oh, true. And you have good recall.
I don't have good recall.
No?
I couldn't tell you what that movie was about.
The one we
it's
just watched.
It's a different thing, though. Mm.
Do you want to have a crack?
No, we talked about it.
Yeah.
Before the podcast. That's when I said what I had to say.
About the movie.
I think it is about, from what you explained to me generously, is that Dom Toretto has a nephew or a cousin. He's gorgeous.
Yeah, he is.
He's got stunning eyes. He's got beautiful curls. He's very model-esque. I'm sure in real life that actor has a modeling contract. And if he does, I'd love to see some of the photos that he's, some editorial photos he's been in, because I'm sure he has an amazing body under those clothes. And so he is in the movie for about 3 seconds. Yes. So, I remember him. And then his uncle is like he pawns people's cars or something. And so they get in a race in the beginning to try and get Dom Toretto's car back or something. Is that a lie?
No, you're in the ballpark.
And then somehow they get to... So you skip forward a little bit. Charlize Theron is in a submarine that is shooting missiles on the ice lake.
Okay, hold on.
And there, someone rams a car over sand and hits a chain that's holding up a big steel bar or beam. Yeah. And a baby has headphones on, and Jason Statham sexually assaults a bunch of people on a plane.
I don't think that's what happened in this movie.
And then, someone shoots the baby's mom to death, but the mom is actually married to Chris Hemsworth, who has an amazing body. He has an incredible V, like his cum gutters, and he's got great pecs and like really tiny waist, but like huge shoulders.
How old do you think
he
is?
And he plays Thor, huh?
How old do you think Chris Hemsworth is?
22.
Pretty close, 39.
39? Yeah. Do you know when his birthday is?
No.
We should do something for Chris Hemsworth's 40th.
That'll be nice.
Have a little party nice or something. Reach out.
Is he here in Australia?
Sometimes. We've sort of fallen out of touch.
You know, someone told me they saw Eric Bana on the street here in Melbourne the other day, like a couple of days ago.
He was a stand-up. He did stand-up before he got into acting.
I learned after when they said that they showed me photos of him doing sketch.
Yeah.
Is this the guy who was the Hulk? Mm-hmm. Briefly.
The original one, yeah.
Ever so briefly. I don't even know. I couldn't pick Eric Bana in the lineup. I don't know what that guy looks like.
He's really handsome. Yeah, he's like dark hair.
So like me. Not like Guy.
Yeah. He's.
I would say he's more like the nephew from Fast 8.
Okay.
It's a good, is that you, same
good
genre.
Touchstone.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Okay. So we've got Chris Hemsworth's got great cum gutters. Jason Statham's sexually assaulted a bunch of people on a plane. Anything else that stood out plot-wise?
There's some plot happening with Dom Toretto is working for the bad guys. He is being blackmailed. Charlize Theron has his baby and the mom. And she wants, what, an EMP? Mm. Is that like electromagnetic pulse thing?
Oh my gosh.
And then, and she has dreads.
It's
but
important.
She's rocking them. And she has blue eyes. And at one point she's in a computer chair and Dom Toretto swings her around in the chair and it's really sexy. You never get to see her pussy though.
Yeah. That's a shame.
They don't show it in the movie and they don't even imply it's there.
I couldn't agree more. I've thought every time I watch it, am I meant to think that Charlize Theron no longer has her pussy?
She no longer has it. She no longer has it.
These movies need to be more explicit with stuff like this because it can get in the way of the actual plot they're trying to get you to concentrate on if they don't specifically address.
I'll direct this maybe to Guy. Do you think that, do you think Michelle Rodriguez has a pussy in this film because of what we see in Cuba? There's sort of like the insinuation of sexual contact. And does that just sort of fill in more blanks?
Oh, like that, because they do have their like sex scene in the movie.
We know she's got
post-coital sort of cuddle scene.
We know she's got arms.
You see that she has arms. And we see that she has a neck.
Yeah.
And I believe...
We don't know that they've both got the whole package.
Clavicle as well. I think the sheet is down low enough that we see that exists.
There is the part where they're all the... So they're confronting Dom Toretto and he's in his famous Dodge Charger. And he's like... He's trying to get away from them. And it's really sad because it's like all of his former friends, his former team... are now having to like team up to try and take him down. So it's kind of like really conflicting to watch that. And you really see it in the performance. They're all giving incredible performances and they're all kind of like their cars are all surrounding Dom. And so they all like latch their cars on. They like harpoon their cars. And there's a moment where they're flashing between each person and everyone's kind of like slamming, they're trying to like pull the car apart, basically hold him in place so that he doesn't get away, he doesn't escape. And they're cutting in between each person in their car, and they cut to Michelle Rodriguez, and she is trying to like reverse her car, put it into gear, and they're like cutting back and forth, and they show her, and she's like gassing it, and she's having a hard time. So she, to shift into a lower gear, she pulls out her pussy and she grabs the stick and she shifts it. And so they show her pussy in that part.
Yeah.
And they show it it's prehensile.
Mm-hmm.
The lips are prehensile. It's almost like the way that like a cuttlefish, how cuttlefish and squid, they have their base six tentacles and then they have the longer, more prehensile two, like tentacles that they use as more like hunting. They like shoot out.
Okay.
It's kind of her labia minora, her inner labia are prehensile and they grab onto the shift.
Yeah.
I cannot believe in eight viewings of this movie,
maybe
I've missed it.
One frame.
So it's in the
it's a single frame.
Yeah, you blink and miss it, but they put it in.
Just like, have you seen how fast cuttlefish and squid are when they shoot their tentacles out to grab
fish?
Yeah,
I have seen that. I haven't seen Michelle Rodriguez's pussy in F8, but I have
seen
that.
That's because it's faster than that.
Yeah.
Wow. And does she do that or is that got a stunt?
Mm-hmm.
Was that her acting or is that got a stunt person?
Or CGI maybe. Or was it a... did she have a pussy double, do you think? Because there's interesting financial ramifications for that, I think. When stars are shifting gears with their own pussy or if they're getting someone else
sub in for a double. It's like, obviously, I don't blame an actor if they don't feel comfortable doing it and they want to hire a double. But also, I think it's like when I do see an actor do it themselves, I'm like, you know, that big props to them. It's brave to put yourself out there that way. Like, again, body doubles, use them if you're not comfortable doing that. But I just think it's awesome that she chose to like show her real pussy and grab the thing with her pussy in the movie. And it's her real pussy for sure.
Very cool.
You know, you actually really, I underestimated how much attention you were paying the movie. It's, you know,
but based on everything you've said, you seem to think I'm like really stupid.
No, I found
Patty,
myself.
There hasn't been any question of your intelligence today, solely to the attention that you were giving the movie. Which I look, I'm in Guy's boat. It didn't look like a person who was fully engaged with what was happening on film. But
that's
we were wrong.
You were busy looking after us as well, which is something I found out after the fact.
Well, it was. It's kind of one of those things where you're like, it's like, I don't know, you have empathy, so you can imagine. You ever feel like...
I can imagine having
empathy. You know how like women talk about like when they're walking on the street at night and then they like, they hear that someone's walking behind them and so they feel like they kind of have to like be like cooking. But like, and it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, you tell yourself nothing bad's going to happen to you. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. But there's just like that built in fear based on our society of like what men are capable of. I felt that exact same feeling while I was watching this movie with you two sitting kind of behind me.
Oh, no.
I was like, what are they going to do?
Oh, yikes.
Because again, I look back and the look on your face was like. A lot of times a movie was playing and Guy was just like. Looking down at his knees.
People, most people won't be able to see what's happening visually. So my attempt at describing it is just a face devoid of any expression or emotion whatsoever.
Like a jaw slightly, just barely slacked, eyes at half mass, eyelids at half mass. A gaze down toward the floor.
And we were behind you giving that... that's awful. That made me think of like when Trump was behind Hillary Clinton on that debate stage. That'd be an apt comparison. Skulking around.
I think he was probably looking at her thong. I have insider information.
Yeah.
That she was wearing her pantsuit actually was. Had a back cut out where you could see their skin.
Wow.
And the pants dipped really low.
Hillary Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of freaking sexy.
And she had a thong on.
Yeah.
Pulled high Pam Anderson Baywatch style.
Oh.
In 2016.
Above the pant line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's nice.
And they don't want to, they're like, Hillary's emails, Pizzagate, yada yada. They don't talk about her being. She knew what she was doing. That's a psyop. She's trying to get in his head by being like, "You ever seen something like this before, Mr. Trump?"
She's saying can't have this, or do you want this, or?
I think she's leaving it up to him to decide.
Wow.
which is so scary what women are capable of, and that's why we're not ready for a woman president.
True words never spoken.
It's nice to finally have someone on the podcast who has the guts to call it exactly how they see it.
I'm just tired of being a sheep in this world.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Petty, we've got a recurring segment on the podcast called The Shining Light because with the movies that we watch traditionally, they're pretty not great films. Mm-hmm. So we like to burst through the ocean of negativity by having something that is positive that we actually enjoyed mm-hmm. about that specific screening of that specific movie. If you would like, we're happy to go first, or if you have something that spoke to you from this movie, a moment, a beat, a character, a line that you were like, that's good.
I know what I have to say, but I want to hear what you guys have to say.
Well, I said it out loud when it happened. It's at the very start, the handsome cousin, they're framing up for the race and there's the sort of debt collector and Vin squaring off and Michelle Rodriguez says something and then she says something in Spanish and then the debt collector says something in Spanish back and then Vin Diesel sort of arcs up because he's a traditional alpha dog who, you know, a woman cannot stand up for herself and he sort of muscles in and then she smiles because she's seen this play out before and she says, ho-ho, now you're going to have a problem. And I like the line read. I like everything it says about their relationship in the movie. I like how much faith Letty has in Dom. I just thought it was... I like the acting and I liked it as a piece of storytelling inside of the film. It really spoke to me.
Interesting.
That's really nice. And there's more of that to come. What? For you, on your journey of watching these movies. You'll be very pleasantly surprised. There's only more.
Very traditional gender roles playing out on the silver screen. I liked Rhodes, but I think I might have already had him as a shining light for me.
You've
and I don't like
Rhodes
to double
guy
up.
For a very long time.
But he was a real boy in an ocean of despair for me today because I think...
B-U-O-Y, by the way.
B-U-O-Y, yeah. Boy. Or buoy.
A buoy.
Depending on where you're from.
How do you say it?
A buoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the ocean?
Yeah.
It makes more like sense because it's such a different thing and it's spelled differently. Why would it be said the same way?
You're deferring to American pronunciation.
But also, buoy is not how it's spelt either. It should be like...
Buoy.
Buoy.
Sounds ridiculous.
Buoy.
Boy,
I will say earlier you mentioned Deadpool, and I liked the way your accent sounded saying Deadpool.
Deadpool. Oh yeah, because of the O's.
Yeah, it's Deadpool. It's different.
Do you know what I was really cognizant of coming in today is that in the Kiwi accent, and I have this very badly, we often pronounce T's as D's, and your name is Patty.
Patty.
And now I'm over enunciating it. but my default would be like petty.
I don't care. Why is that? Because Pat with two D's, it's masculine, and because I'm transgender, you're worried that I'm gonna think you're like misgendering me or something.
There wasn't where I went with it.
I've got a joke for exactly this.
Oh, dear.
It's a street joke, but it's how did the butcher introduce his wife?
Meet Patty.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
It's good gear.
I always noticed.
You guys can have that.
How did the butcher introduce his wife?
How?
Meet Patty. How did the butcher introduce his wife?
How?
He fish hook her in her fucking mouth. He said, get in here, you fucking stupid bitch. Come meet my coworkers, you stupid fucking bitch.
It's a powerful way to introduce people. And what I think a butcher would do, because they're powerful people, slaughtering animals all
well,
day.
Well, they have the cleaver.
Hell yeah.
And that ability, where do you think, when they're so good at that at in the meat shop, action, because when they're at home, they're on their wife and they're going.
Dang, developing those butcher muscles.
Meat
that's,
patty.
That's
butchers
a lot.
Work backwards from being abusive husbands. Do you think that's how they get into butchery?
They're like, I could get paid for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
this is
I think
waste of an applied skill set.
I think Patty's like, wait, before you do it one more time, just think of how much more happy you'd be if you were putting that skill into a vocation.
Yeah.
And making a living.
Wow. And he still treats it that way. That's
And
that's,
finally some relief.
Yeah. It's upsetting.
It
makes
is.
Me think of that butcher, Jesse Plemons in Fargo, one of the seasons.
I don't watch a show.
Neither. They made it anyway.
Jesse Plemons, the actor?
Yeah. He's acting against Kirsten Dunst. I think it's how they met. I think
against
it's their meet-cute. Yeah, well, you know, with her, alongside.
Is that a common, like, turn of phrase to in
Act
New Zealand?
Someone.
To be like, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's not...
it was competitive.
I always look at it, like, visually. Or, like, interpret it visually. You're acting against someone. So someone's, like, on the opposite side of you, an opposite side of a conversation.
Mm-hmm. But also, sort of spiritually, I'd say in this episode, Tim and I are podcasting against you.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. Well, I think it's kind of, unfortunately, the composition of the room is that you two are on a couch and then I'm in, like, a chair in the hotel flat that they gave me that feels very
incredibly therapized when you were sitting in your comfortable chair and I was literally on a couch while there was sort of some quite intelligent diagnosis, I think, of what I'm doing to myself with the podcast.
You go ahead, Patty.
I was just gonna say I don't think what anything that I said could really be considered therapizing, because I think I have too much of a point of view. I'm infusing too much of it with my opinion, which is not necessarily...
That's what the best therapy is all about.
The practice of a good therapist.
No, that's the best therapy. Bad therapy is like, I'm hearing you saying this. Great therapy is, you need to do this. You need to cut this person out of your life. You need to tell your boss to shove it. You need to go to the gym.
Do you think...
You need to keep watching Wally as a reminder to not... eat those foods.
Is that what your therapist is like? Do you have a therapist?
No, but I'm hoping to find one like that.
Do you think Tim should cut me out of his life, Patty?
Here's the thing. No. You two seem to be close friends, and you have a rapport that's really wonderful, and you seem to have a lot of fun and feel comfort and safety with each other. Let's just be mindful of when safety crosses over into being enabling. And it seems so far you've only enabled each other into being semi unhealthy in a way that only functions to be harmful directly to you most of the time. But now I've been brought into this orbit, and from what I understand, David O'Doherty is being brought into that orbit just moments after this.
Do you feel like injured by proximity to what we've created?
I'm not injured, but I'm changed.
Oh, wow.
Positively or negatively? Or is it sort of outside of that spectrum?
It's too soon to tell.
Okay. Well,
it's nice to know this has left a mark.
Return to my original question was there a bit of the film that you enjoyed?
Before you do that, Tim.
Oh.
You skirted around outlining what you enjoyed.
It was just Connor Rhodes.
No, you've done Connor Rhodes.
You
got to
do something new.
Okay.
Yeah, you get his ass.
Well,
fucking bitch.
I've never... I really like seeing Roman skidding across the ice on the door. I think it's a cool thing. It's like a bit of extreme sports in the movie that gets inserted to kind of service that section of the audience that might have grown up with the X Games or whatever. You think he's dead because he's in a Maserati? What is he? I should ask the car, expert.
Well, Guy was on it.
What is it?
Is it an orange Lamborghini?
Oh, a Lambo, that's right.
Lamborghini Mercy.
And everyone's mocking him because it's skidding and skating around because he picked the flashy car instead of the appropriate car for the conditions in Russia. And then the ice breaks, he sinks, we all think he's died. Ludacris shoots a harpoon into the Lambo, dragging him through the icy water where he's trapped underneath the surface of it. A situation where you would presume someone would die. And we all think he has died. And then we hold our breath. And then, crashing up out of the surface of the ice and water, a door appears with Roman holding on for dear life. And he skids across like a toboggan. And it's pretty cool.
And then he immediately murders four people. Yes. He shoots four people to death.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the line, the little quip he has is, I'm sick of this.
This is, no, who's
it's
number,
something my ass.
It's some, yeah, number 11, my ass, because he found that he was 11th on Interpol's most wanted list, and he thinks he deserves a higher ranking. And so by murdering four Russian separatists, who we don't even know their standing relative to anyone's government.
Is that my phone?
I think that, is that the alarm that you set?
No, that's an independent alarm, but we are just about to wrap up, and you're not getting out of here, Patty, without telling us what specifically you enjoyed. Okay. From our film,
Well, I, you know, the door stuff. There is a lot of door stuff that was interesting to see. That like felt. I guess that's more of a criticism because I was about to say it felt like there was too much door stuff, but they didn't have someone to do door pass. So I'm actually not going to veer down that way anymore. I'm sorry. I'm not answering your question, and I'm wasting time. We talked about it a little earlier, but I think something that I appreciate about all of the Fast and Furious movies is the grandiosity of the action sequences and like the technical, like just like how insane some of the stunts are, even though there is a lot of computer animation, some of the stuff that they shoot, it's like we are so just kind of bludgeoned, I think, with action movies and stuff that you get jaded when like the scene where the guy drives the car onto the moving plane. It's like you've seen that so many times in a movie that it doesn't register as like, it's just like in a scene, if someone's like walking into a door and setting down their car keys, is like the same reaction I have to someone like driving a car out of a moving plane.
Yeah.
Like, and then there's like they jump out of the car and they're like parachuting. It's like, you've just seen it so many times, but some of the ways that they film the driving sequences is so cool. And I would just feel like it would be crazy to like how, it'd be crazy to see how they coordinate that stuff. It just feels so dangerous.
At one point, you were describing the cars as like bodies in a kung fu film. It was quite beautiful. I agreed.
Yeah, and even bodies in a porn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the scene where the cars fuck, it felt a lot like that.
Yeah, the muffler bent.
Yeah.
And distended.
Yeah, yeah.
And went into...
Spoiler.
Michelle.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, gotcha.
Gotcha.
I don't think that might be from an earlier one that we haven't seen yet. I don't think that was in this film.
I like the idea of using cars because we've, I think on the podcast, hopefully, otherwise I've had a really weird conversation out of context about this, but people who have sex with cars, people who fuck cars.
Is it like mechaphilia or something? Yeah. What is it? There's, yeah.
Or like autosexuals.
Yeah.
But instead of that, like just removing the whole human element from it and having a porn movie that is its car, it's like Disney's Cars, but a porno, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So they're all just cars, yeah, like humans aren't a part of it.
I'd love to see, you know, like a little thumbnail if you're on one of those dirty websites where it's like Lightning McQueen, you know, with a big cock coming out of underneath his chassis.
I mean, what? I didn't originally want them to be anthropomorphized at all, but now I think that would be pretty fun, actually.
So did you say Lightning McQueen with a big cock coming out from under his chest or his chassis?
His chassis.
So what I do think it would be fascinating is that I really felt like when the movie Cars came out, it was a surprising and felt like intentionally subversive choice to make the windshield the eyes and not the headlights the eyes of the cars. And I feel like they would maybe follow that mindset when placing the cock or the pussy on the asshole, where, you know, most people would assume that the muffler is an orifice. Sure. But do you think they would do something like the trunk is the ass or the pussy?
To be consistent with how they've started off with the biology of how these cars work, I think maybe they've made the hinge for the front door that's the pussy.
Often the issue is...
the hinge for the... Which one? So it's asymmetrical?
It's asymmetrical, yeah. Because they're cars, they're not people.
The issue is that a lot of the time the people who are animating the pornos aren't, you know, they're not the ones who came up with the original designs. So it's difficult for the people who are making the R18 versions of these.
Because I think like
Did you say R18?
Yeah, I described porn films as R18.
What is that?
Rated 18. 18 and over, you're allowed to watch. 17 and 364 days.
I can't remember what it's called. And like, what's the American rating system if you have to be 18 to see a movie? An R-rated
rated
movie.
Rated R?
Yeah.
But that's, rated R isn't pornographic. Rated X is pornographic. There's movies that are NC-17, which is, rated R movies, you can be under 18 or if you're with a parent. And then NC-17, technically, I think the MPAA rating for it used to be that you could not be under 17. Like, even if you were with your parent, you had to be above 17 years old to see the movie.
For which ones? For X?
For NC-17. And that's like a movie with like explicit sexual. Mm. Usually it's just for sex.
So how hardcore does something need to be? So there's NC-17 and you have to be 17 to see that. Guardians... irrelevant.
But then
there's X as well.
Rated X is porn.
As soon as you put a pussy on a door hinge, that's X.
I was wondering if, because like I feel we limit ourselves so much when we sort of put our own conditioning onto objects that aren't human or even traditionally animal, that maybe these cars could be like all of them hermaphroditic. So they have like a pussy on one side and a cock and balls on the other, and that's how it sort of... Because you really raised an eyebrow thinking about the logistics of an asymmetrical sexual organ on the car. But what if there was like one on each hinge? Is that anything, Patty?
Well, I do have to ask, hermaphroditic. I feel...
I'm not even sure if that's a word.
Is that? I think it is. Okay. Then I feel like that suggests like more like what's like the mating cycle for the car than if it has both parts. Is it purely for sexual?
I think often they are aligned perfectly so the cars can get up on their hind wheels and drive directly towards each other and they're both experiencing sexual pleasure from both respective organs.
I feel, but no, I think Tim, you were saying that the pussy's on one side, the cock and balls is on the other. So correct. It's the left and the right side of the car. It's not the back or the front.
Yeah.
So I don't think any mounting's happening. I think they're actually parking side by side.
It's like when you eat
at like a place that has like roller skating where they skate up to the car and they put the little thing on the side of the door. That's kind of where it would flop out.
Yeah. I
feel this is as good a place as any to end our meditation on Fate of the Furious. It's been a journey to get through all eight of those films. And I speak, you know, on the ongoing mission of getting through the entire franchise with great excitement about our next screening. And Patty, it's been genuinely incredibly insightful and by turns quite absurd having you join us for this conversation.
Well,
so thank
you. Before you do your big close, I have to ask each of you, after eight viewings of this movie, what is the message that you've taken, the one takeaway from the message of the film?
The message that the movie wants you to think that this whole franchise is about, NFA.
Just the eighth movie.
The message they want you to think that from it's that. About is family.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not correct. You can't just say the word family a bunch of times and then retrospectively say, look, that's what we told you this movie franchise is about, because it's a tack on. What this is really about is cars and the petrodollar, and I think the American Empire's stranglehold culturally, financially, militarily over the world. And I just think there's so many examples of it peppered throughout the two films we've seen so far. I'm looking forward to seeing more cinematic examples of American hegemony. And I think that's the real message of the Fate of the Furious, because it's the fate of the world. We are fated to all live under the watchful eye of Uncle Sam.
I think it's about how Charlize Theron has lost her pussy.
And she's furious.
Yeah, she's grown dreadlocks about it. Well, Patty, thank you so much. Have you got anything coming out that you'd like people to look forward to or towards or at?
Yeah, I've got some allegations against me coming out.
Well, keep an eye out for those. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week for Fast 7, A New Dawn.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.